Welcome back to this special bonus episode of Across the Movie Aisle. Thanks for being a member of Bulwark Plus. We couldn't do what we do without your support. I'm joined, as always, by Alyssa Rosenberg of The Washington Post, Peter Suderman of Reason Magazine. Alyssa, Peter, how are you on this Friday?
I'm swell.
I'm so happy to be talking about Danny Boyle movies. Can't believe we've never done that before. Like, not like this. Anyway, so happy to be talking about Danny Boyle movies with friends.
That's right, folks. It's a Danny Boyle draft. Danny Boyle draft. Three rounds. Snaking. Typical stuff here. And I just picked. I didn't even pick the order out of a hat. I just picked the order with my brain. So if you guys don't like it, too bad. The round is the order is going to be Peter and then Alyssa and then Sonny. And then that means Sonny, Alyssa, and Peter in the second round, and then Peter, Alyssa, and Sonny in the third. Right? Snake order. That's how we do it. It's how it always works. And it's great. So anyway, Peter, you are up first. What is your number one Danny Boyle movie?
Oh, this is actually pretty tough. I'm not going to tell you what my second choice is, because maybe I want to pick it. I want nobody else to pick it, even though somebody's going to. Okay. I'm actually going to pick Sunshine. I'm going to pick Sunshine because it is, it's the follow-up crazy horror film to 28 Days Later that he did with Alex Garland. And it's a little bit underrated, but it's great. It's so cool looking. It's so terrifying. It has some of the just like the best science fiction imagery ever. And then it blends its horror elements into the third acts like so stunningly. This is in many ways the movie that Event Horizon should have been. I even think Event Horizon is actually okay for what it is, but it's kind of an enjoyable trash film. And this is a movie that takes a concept that should just be enjoyable trash and wildly elevates it in every way.
For a long time, I thought the final act of this movie had Event Horizon problems. I think I've literally used that phrase before. It has Event Horizon problems in that it kind of goes from more cerebral sci-fi-ish sort of thing, or, you know, I'm not saying Event Horizon was a cerebral film exactly, but it was, you know, it was more mood based than kind of slasher action based. And then it shifts very hard in that last bit. And I didn't like how it was shot. I didn't like the like kind of stop and go the way, but I have come around on that. I actually think it's about perfect now. The last 15 minutes or so of that movie are kind of like perfectly calibrated, both thematically and visually to get across the points being made. I like that pick. I like that pick. Alyssa, what's your number one?
I love Slumdog Millionaire. Like, I think that movie is flawed, but it's also just like really exuberant and lovely. It introduces the world to Dev Patel. I like the structure of it. I am a sentimental weirdo, and I like Danny Boyle's sentimental weirdo side. And I think this is him where his sentimental weirdo is both predominant, but much more controlled than in movies, like Millions or Yesterday.
I know that Peter dismisses this movie as Indian Forrest Gump. That's his. That is his take on it. I know, but I'm a big fan of Slumdog Millionaire. Great movie, very well done. Yes, is it sentimental? Yes, but it is a perfectly structured film, and just is charming and delightful throughout. So good pick.
You can have it.
Oh, fine. Don't worry.
Okay, all
we
right.
do have it. We do have it. I'm going to go with, boy, this is a hard one. I am going to go with 28 Days Later, which is, I think it's the first Danny Boyle movie I saw in a theater. Pretty sure. I don't think I saw The Beach in a theater. And I certainly didn't see Trainspotting because it came out when I was 14. I'm a big fan of 28 Days Later for really upending the way the zombie movie worked. You know, it's kind of the first real mainstream introduction of the fast zombies, right? I've never bought slow zombies as a threat, particularly in a country as well-armed as America. I'm sorry. Like, if I see a shambling corpse coming down the street, and I have enough bullets to handle more than one or two of them, all right? So I've never been taken by those as an enormous threat. But the fast zombies, now that's terror. That's scary. That's scary stuff right there. You can't really aim. They're too all over the place. Too kinetic. I don't like it. Don't like that sort of stuff. So I also love that movie because it involves in the opening sequence, researchers showing monkeys violent news footage to make them mad, which then gives them a disease that they can transfer to people by biting them.
Are you saying that that has something to do with maybe that actually happened in real life?
I'm not saying that this proves the media is too violent and is bad for you, but you think about it. Think about the metaphor here, folks. Think about it. Also, they're let go by a radical environmentalist, which just is one more point in favor of my argument that environmentalists make great movie villains because they want to make your real life worse by unleashing the rage virus. All right. I also have the second pick. Ha ha. I get to do the wrap around here. And I am going to go. This is a tough one for me. But I think I'm going to go with Trainspotting, which is just objectively a great movie. It's like it's a peak of the kind of British New Wave and the cool Britannia thing. But of course, like kind of an ironic look at it since it's through the lens of the Scots who are not very happy with all that. But it's like the perfect mix of kinetic, stylish editing with great low budget filmmaking and just a ton of actors who I don't think folks knew who like Ewan McGregor was at the time, or Ewan Bremmer, or what's his name from
McGregor
Hackers.
Had already been in Shallow Grave.
Yeah, but Shallow Grave again. I don't think Shallow Grave was a big breakout hit. I mean, like some people would say, Johnny Lee Miller, of course, Robert Carlyle, so good. No. Kelly MacDonald, so good in this. There's such a wealth of talent here that I always enjoy watching it just to watch. Everybody go to work. They're also good. James Cosmo, you get a shout out too. All right. Alyssa, what is your second pick?
I, in keeping with my status as like a sentimental nerd, I'm going to take 28 Years Later, which really just knocked my socks off. And I thought was just so unusual and surprising. Like I feel like I see a lot of movies that are sort of excellent, but I see very few movies that just like totally surprise me. And this one did. And I think it's really going to improve its stature with time for me. I really loved it.
Great movie. If there are five movies I see that are better this year than it will have been a very good year. I'm also very curious to see what like real audiences make of this movie. It got a solid B from CinemaScore, which is not bad. I expected much, much angrier response. But the post track wasn't that good. I'm curious to see how this film holds, but I hope folks go see it. If you haven't seen 28 Years Later, go watch 28 Years Later. You won't regret it. Peter, what's your next pick?
I think I'm going to have to go with The Beach because The Beach gave us the collaborations between Alex Garland and Danny Boyle. Even though the screenplay was by John Hodge, this sort of connected the two of them and helped set us up for a couple of decades of pretty great movies. Also, young Leonardo DiCaprio, before he became, I mean, yes, he's already been in Titanic at this point, but like young Leonardo DiCaprio and sort of before he became late breaking superstar that we know him as today. Also, cinematography by Darius Kanji, who might I don't know, certainly one of my top three or four favorite cinematographers. This was just a couple of years after he did Seven, which I still think is one of the best shot movies ever.
The Beach is great and it's the sort of movie that was really kind of overlooked it was not appreciated at the time because it's not quite the follow-up to Trainspotting. He had made A Life Less Ordinary before that, but it was Leonardo DiCaprio's first movie after Titanic. It was his first big starring role after Titanic, and people were like, "Oh, what's the heartthrob from Titanic gonna make?" He makes this weird, like, kind of almost art housey type movie that has like video game 8-bit video game sequences in the middle of it. Just a really interesting film that was the first time I remember seeing Tilda Swinton. She's very good in it. Very good. Like her. All right, Peter, you have the wraparound here. What's your last, your third and final pick in the Danny Boyle draft?
Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs. Okay, so look, Steve Jobs is maybe not exactly the movie that I hoped it would be, because what I hoped for was a follow-up to The Social Network directed by David Fincher. And if I understand correctly, David Fincher was, in fact, supposed to direct it. But Danny Boyle is an inspired choice for this film, and really finds ways to... So this is an Aaron Sorkin script, and it has all of the Aaron Sorkin tics, and right, many of which I kind of personally enjoy, but they can be overmuch, especially in feature format. And Aaron Sorkin, I think, is best when he has a director who he's working with who kind of cuts against him and is sort of not letting him just go sort of full walk and talk banter, you know, quippy remarks the entire time. And you get that here. This is it's a darker and grittier movie. It still has that sort of almost play-like structure. It's basically three big sequences, you know, tied together. It's not sort of, you know, the whole life of Steve Jobs. It's three moments that encapsulate everything. But Boyle does a great job with it. It is a movie that I think people, I think it's a somewhat underrated film, in part just because, sort of it had, people had hoped it to be, that it would be something else, but the thing that it is, the thing that it came out as is actually pretty great.
Steve Jobs came out, it was one of those volcano Dante's Peak situations where there was Steve Jobs and then there was the Ashton Kutcher one, which I think was called Jobs.
Yeah, the Ashton Kutcher one, if I recall, was like a mid-August or early September dump. They sort of understood that it wasn't a great movie. And this one was set to come out for award season, you know, after Social Network had done so well. But it just didn't quite land with a lot of people. But if you go back and watch it again, I think you will see that it is... It's a tight and excellent film, and a little more sort of formally grounded than some of the other Danny Boyle films that are a little more ecstatic.
And Fassbender is so good in it. He is yes. Like he is amazing. I enjoy that movie a lot. I have not watched it in years. I should go back and watch it again. Alyssa, what is your third and final pick?
I'm going to go eccentric with the National Theater Live Frankenstein production, starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller both in sort of dual roles as Frankenstein, as Victor Frankenstein and the creature. It's an interesting production. Boyle is like the one, I think, sort of high tone director who's ever really known what to do with Johnny Lee Miller, who is an actor I like a lot, but who, like, it's just sort of odd as an actor. And I think that more talented film directors should do theater adaptations, because it's good to have good broadcasts of theater. People should like the form.
I'm a big fan of Johnny Lee Miller. I love him. We've talked about Hackers before on the, I have an enormously soft spot in my heart for the movie Hackers. And I love his kind of weird, the weird energy he brings to that alongside
super
Angelina
weird energy. Yeah, like in retrospect, he actually like totally nails the vibe of someone who's like online and in-person personalities are like imperfectly meshed. Yeah, he's really like, I enjoy him a lot.
What was the actual title of, I'm just going to call this Frankenstein because there's a whole long, this is cheating, by the way. This is not a film. Just because it was broadcast in theaters does not make it a film. It was.
Fine.
But I'll allow it. I'll in my benevolence
Thank
as dictator
you.
Of the show, I will allow it.
Thank you, Sonny.
There's been so many great picks. And I am a little bit torn on this one because I kind of want to pick Millions, which is very good, but I don't think anyone has seen. And so I feel like that would help me, that would lead to me to lose this contest, because it is a contest. I'm going to follow up Trainspotting with T2 Trainspotting, which is the sequel, which is a legacy sequel. And it was in this kind of run of legacy sequels where like, why is this being made? Blah, blah, blah. It's a profoundly great movie. It may actually be better than the original Trainspotting. It is a perfect kind of distillation of Britain and England, really Britain and like the kind of the way the Scottish, you know, resentment of all that, but also the way that all plays into the idea of globalism in the British context. This idea of people feeling the need to go overseas to make money. They come back. They can't build what they want. There's no money to do what they want. The whole system is broken. And it's just deeply, I don't know. I wasn't expecting to pick this, frankly, but folks should watch it. I can't really describe why it works right now without sitting down and thinking about it a little more. But it is as good as any of these legacy sequels have been, because it takes the characters and it actually situates them in something approaching the real world that we all have to encounter, rather than a world of their own creation and continuation of that lore, which is, I think, is also one of the reasons why 28 years later works, which is, another kind of legacy sequel that doesn't really have to exist, but I think kind of does it works well as kind of an idea about where we are.
So right this now. Is really this draft and just this this our regular episode this week made me think that I would really love to read an Interview magazine conversation with Danny Boyle and Edgar Wright. Just because, like, the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy is so rooted in sort of, like, small town England, and Boyle is so much about sort of looking out beyond England's borders. I would just read the hell out of that. Interview magazine, get that going.
Yeah, that'd be great. We should that should happen. All right, just to recap the list here, we got Peter picked Sunshine, The Beach, and Steve Jobs. Alyssa picked Slumdog Millionaire, 28 Years Later, and the cinematic presentation of his stage adaptation of Frankenstein. And I picked 28 Days Later and Trainspotting and T2 Trainspotting. So that's solid list here. I think I good movies all around. Nobody picked A Life Less Ordinary. Nobody wanted the Cameron Diaz, Ewan McGregor, Angel. Isn't something about Angel? I haven't seen that movie since it came out, I think.
Yeah.
No, like, actually, yeah. I didn't even see it there. Maybe I've never actually watched it. I don't know. I gotta go check my logs.
No, thank you. Yeah.
No, nobody wanted that. All right. Okay, that is it for today's show. Many thanks to our producer, Danny Dorst, who's filling in for Rupert Manderstam. Tell your friends, strong recommendation from a friend is basically the only way to grow podcast audiences. If we don't grow, we'll die. If you did not love today's episode, please complain to me on Twitter @SunnyMunch. I'll convince you that this is, in fact, the best show in your podcast feed. See you guys next week.